Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Privilege this morning to be joined by a retired Marine Corps General Officer, Michael Regner. So, sir, first of all, welcome to All Marine Radio. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Anytime I get a chance to reach out to my fellow veterans and fellow active duty members, as well as their spouses and family members, it's quite an honor. I was honored to serve beside.
You said this to me a few minutes ago, so I get to turn it around on you. Before we can decide if we can believe you or not, we need to learn something about you. So let's talk about you, as uncomfortable as this is for most Marines. Born and raised where?
Born at Scott Air Force Base, Illinois. My dad was an Air Force pilot, served in World War II as a bomber pilot, survived that, believe it or not. Flew fighters in Korea, survived that, and then not long after that, actually 1965, he retired and went to work for the Army Air Force Exchange and found himself in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive. So I'm very fortunate. I come from a long line of military leaders and military members that have had a chance to serve their nation, both in peacetime and in conflict.
How, you're an Air Force kid, so are you that kid that says, I've got to piss my dad off and join the Marine Corps? How does the Marine Corps get on your horizon?
Well, you're right. That's great, because my one brother was a door gunner in Vietnam, the other one in the Army, and the other one did administrative services in the Army, and then my dad says, hey, look, your older brother served in the Army. They weren't real keen on it, so I flew, and you're going to college at the Citadel, so what do you think about maybe Air Force ROTC, Navy ROTC? And I went, I'll tell you what, Dad, I'll look into that Navy ROTC, and from that he says, hey, you might even want to be a pilot someday. And, you know, it's kind of funny because you really – do when you say Navy ROTC, it's Naval ROTC, which has in your beginning years of college, you spend 2 or 3 weeks in the summer doing Navy side issues. Then the other 2 or 3 weeks in the summer, you spend Marine side issues. And I was actually thinking about being a pilot until I went down to Corpus Christi, Texas at about 110 degrees every day, and they put you in ejection seat trainers, and they put you with Vietnam veteran pilots that wanted to fly you upside down and see how many barf bags you could go through. And it was classic. Then I went to Camp Lejeune. I went to some other Marine Corps training areas, and I went, hey, Dad, I got to tell you, this flight training stuff is, I don't know if I'm quite the man you are, but this Marine Corps stuff is really pretty cool. I think he hung up on me. And I saw him a month or so later, and he says, well, you got to do what you got to do. I'm just proud that you're going to serve.
Where do you go to college? Do you go to college? Do you enlist? How do you find your way to the Marine Corps?
Yeah, my dad had, again, I have 2 older brothers who went to Ohio State, and they weren't doing too well in school back in 67, 68. They both got drafted. Actually, one got drafted, the other one enlisted. I'm 7 years younger than my brothers, 7 or 8 years younger. And my dad knew, and I was wrestling at the Citadel. I had a scholarship to wrestle at the Citadel and a couple other scholarships. And my dad said, you know, that Citadel is kind of a military school. You don't have to go in the military there, but it'll really give you good leadership training if you go to a school like the Citadel. And you might even get a scholarship for more than athletics. You might get an ROTC scholarship. Well, in fact, that's what happened. I had an athletic scholarship for wrestling, and then I had an ROTC scholarship down at the Citadel. And so when you select which service branch you wanted to go into, and I picked going into the Navy Marine Option Program at the NROTC at Siloam. So that's how it all started.
Did you have it in mind then that you would join the Marine Corps, or were you, now that you were over the aviation event, were you unsure about which service, or were you aimed at the Marine Corps even then?
I don't think I made up my mind until about my junior year in college, start of my junior year, and I think I made up my mind not to fly, to go in the Navy, because I saw some of the different leadership styles and techniques, you know, it was all good, but I preferred, I preferred kneecap-to-kneecap leadership with officers and enlisted men and not NCOs, non-NCOs, staff NCOs. I saw a lot of the leadership skills at the Citadel on the wrestling team, and I also ran track. I saw a lot of those leadership skills, honestly, when I went to the Marine side of my summer training. And then I got to know some of the Marine Enlisted Commissioning Program NCOs at the Citadel and staff NCOs. And I got to know some Navy petty officers at the Citadel. Like, I really just saw the leadership style of the Marines. But they got to know everybody, not after each other. The other services did that as well. However, I just thought I could follow the leadership style of the Marines and understand it a little bit better. And another part of it was every different sport at the Citadel has a active duty sponsor or mentor. And believe it or not, my active duty sponsor mentor for the Citadel wrestling team back in 1972 to 76 was a Vietnam veteran F-4 Phantom pilot, Marine Corps major. And he had wrestled at the Citadel. He was tough as nails. And I really enjoyed his leadership. He didn't care if I was going grunt or going aviation, but I saw him. And I saw my other coaches and some of the other active duty officers at the Citadel, and I think I just followed some of the different leadership styles of the Marines closer than I did some of the other branches.
You know, we line up a little bit more with wrestling than a lot of the other services do. And plus, you know, if you see the movie Vision Quest, you know, where the guy wrestles, I think, right? The guy who he wrestles, that guy's a Marine, man. I don't know who put it, I don't know who casted him. And then he gets beat by that little twerp. Come on. We all know that was garbage. But wrestlers in the Marine Corps, I think it's pretty much a natural fit.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, Vision Quest is one of my greatest movies. I can't believe you brought that one up. But, you know, in the last 20 years, 30 years, the Marine Corps has really grabbed hold of whether it was the line training or the initial martial arts training or the body hardening, body toughening, mental agility, mental strength, resilience, and then, of course, now you've got your MCMAP, Marine Corps Martial Arts programs. And that's about toughness, mental toughness, physical toughness, the ability to persevere when things are really tough. I mean, it's important to be physically tough and physically strong, but I always thought that some of the programs at the Marine Corps really got behind and endorsed and are doing a really good job with are some of those programs that build the mental toughness that you need during some of the different challenging periods of time that we face in the Marine Corps, especially when you're downrange.
Well, if you talk to the guys, and I've had them on and interviewed them that were part of, you know, putting the Marine Corps Martial Arts program together from the bottom up, it was just as much about the mental as it was the physical, and they, you know, they will say, look, it's not a black belt program, right? That's not what it is. I mean, otherwise you're going to go into a bar and get your ass kicked. It is about learning the mental side of martial arts, the discipline, and all the things you talk about, resiliency, and that's a huge part of it. And if anybody who thinks it's just a black black belt karate program is completely missing the point. So well said. Well said. How do you find your way to becoming to your MOS? How do you figure that out?
Well, you know, Marine officers, you go through your officer candidate school or bulldog training or platoon leader corps or some type of discipline that and school that feeds you into the basic school. Then while you're at the basic school, they're going to give you a lot of different opportunities to talk to and practice in the different MOS disciplines. And so I'll just say that I was very fortunate that my staff platoon commander, the first Marine captain I really got to know well, was at the basic school, and he was an infantry officer. And he noticed that, you know, I grew up when my dad was in the Air Force, but he would deploy. I'd spend a lot of time with my grandfather on the farm in Ohio. And he was a great outdoorsman, and he had good wood sense. And he damn sure knew what body hardening was and mental toughness, because I mean, many a day when I felt like it was 10 degrees below, he'd say, perfect day to hunt. And he knew how to track. He knew how to clean animals, and he knew the stars, and he knew everything about nature. And so I got to learn that. So we go to the basic school, and we do some infantry training, and I can read the stars. I know how to, you know, read the North Sea King Arrow and the North Star and the Big Dipper, Little Dipper, and I know my way around at night. And I'm comfortable at night, and I'm comfortable in really harsh conditions. And my captain, again, the staff platoon commander, said, you know, Regner, you have the skills from leadership as well as your awareness of the outdoors, probably at the infantry MOS, and I'm going to recommend you for that if that's what your first choice is going to be. And I said, absolutely, sir. I had a good time with doing this training in November, December, and January, whether it's snowing and everybody's freezing, you know, you just suck it up. And that's why I went that route.
So you bought the uniquely qualified, hand-selected thing, hook, line, and sinker?
Yeah. They made me put down two additional MOSs, and I said, okay, which other two can I get and stay in the woods? And I think I went with artillery, and then I went with engineers, hoping, by God, I did well enough in my leadership evals, or they jokingly call them spear evals, not evals. And I think I did well enough to actually get my first choice. I damn sure can tell you right now, academically, I might have been average to below average, but leadership-wise, I'm not saying I was really dynamic and great, but I think I held my own in the areas that they put a lot of weight on.
You know, so I'd be curious your thoughts, but in my career, I used to, you know, when you're evaluating lieutenants, I always thought it was a good thing. They played team sports. If they were a captain on that team and, you know, BC student with a little bit of personality, I used to look at those guys and like, he's going to be okay because he knows how to compete. He knows how to lead. You know, academically, you don't have to be a genius in this organization to do really well. And if you have a little bit of personality, you can relate to people. Those guys will do good. And so I mean, that sounds like the way you grew up. Certainly the way I grew up. I mean, I grew up, my dad was in professional baseball. I grew up playing sports. He managed the Reds. I actually spent some time in Ohio, a couple summers in Ohio. But I had an aviation contract. And I got to the basic school, and we started doing grunt things, and I said, this is what I should do. You know, I know how to be on a team. I know I'm a leader. Being with guys outdoors, right, dealing with their problems. And so I walked in. I said, how do I get rid of my aviation contract? And they said, sign here. But I went through kind of the same thing. But it just seemed a natural fit to me. And knowing a little bit and having read a little bit about the history of the Marine Corps, I knew that that was the tip of the spear. and probably something that I would investigate. So interesting. How did I think it's fascinating during that period of time. And is it General Walt that opens the door, and you know, with the drug problems and the racial issues, isn't it General Walt that opens the door and says, "Hey, get him out. I don't care if it's me, the sergeant major, my driver. We're gonna get this out of the Marine Corps." What was it like? You hit the fleet in what, 1976? Or got commissioned in 76. Talk to me about, I joined the Marine Corps in 1983, so a little bit after you. What was the Marine Corps like?
You're right. Walt was one of the fathers of let's take a look at ourselves and let's look at how the nation sees us. And if we're hurting ourselves and are hurting our communities and not able to be ready when the nation is least ready, and all those aspects, you know, when the America, as is stated by Victor Krulak, America doesn't necessarily need a Marine Corps. They want a Marine Corps because of the ethos, the readiness, the bearing, the proven audacity in combat and in peacetime. So we did have a problem, and I came in 1976, and I got to tell you, one of the wildest rides I took on was when I was I saw it as a second lieutenant in my platoon, but my platoon sergeant, Staff Sergeant Rivers, to this day said, "Lieutenant, there's a lot of things in this platoon that you and I can clean up together. Some of it's drugs, some of it's alcohol, some of it's just by the very nature of the different nationalities and ethnic backgrounds that are represented in this platoon. But we don't see black, sir. We don't see Asian. We see American. And we together can clean it up." Now, Staff Sergeant Rivers was a hard-charging African-American from South Carolina. He knew I was from South Carolina. And I'll tell you, whether it was Hispanic or Korean or Asian or any of the nationalities, after he and I started working together, I think we really reduced the infighting and some of the racial issues we had in our platoon. That's about 30 people, of course, back in 76, 77. Now, we did have the alcoholics. We did have the druggies. But every druggie that we had, in all honesty, that he and I knew about, they might have been blowing marijuana and blowing dope, but we did not see the traces of any type of hard narcotics, because, one, you couldn't really, in our estimation, from our training, you couldn't do it in the field. You couldn't do it late at night because it would carry through to the next day. You couldn't do it with needles. And people weren't really burning acid or LSD or coke or any of that crazy stuff that some folks do now. But yes, we did have probably let's say out of 30 people, I bet we had maybe 10 of them that smoked marijuana. And then they had developed the urinalysis, and then they developed the rapid discharge program, expeditious discharge program. And, you know, I think because he was an African-American and I was a white American, and we both had dissimilar backgrounds, but we knew enough to talk to the NCOs on a regular basis and go, again, kneecap to kneecap leadership right in the barracks and then out in the field. Every chance we got, if these youngsters were getting out, we helped them with transition. We helped their families with employment. We helped them in the schools. And so Rivers and I were a little bit of a different breed, is that we saw that most of them came in for some type of GI Bill. Most of them came in to get away from something back home in you name the city in America. And when they joined up with this group, the last thing they really wanted to do was feel as though, well, I'm Asian, I'm Caucasian, I'm African American, and I'm looked down upon. So the last thing we want to do was both. Rivers was a track star in high school. We both had an athletic coaching, teamwork type of protocol that we really brought to the team. But we still had guys using drugs, and some of them, you know, if they did something wrong three times, they went up for the expeditious discharge. Doing something wrong meant non-judicial punishment. But back again, Mike, as you know, back in the 70s and early 80s, we did a lot of different discipline programs that just wasn't non-judicial punishment, which took away a couple of weeks of pay, restricted you, and reduced you in rank. You know, we had the programs that really you might consider them hard labor, but the programs that really placed you in a work environment with leadership throughout the day. So, I mean, one time I went on a jog at noontime, and this is when I started to realize the value of a staff NCO giving me the guidance of what a non-NCO or NCO might understand. I went on a jog in the woods at Camp Geiger, at Camp Lejeune, found four guys blowing dope, smoking marijuana. I came up on them in my PT clothes. I didn't have my ID card on. And I said, hey, you guys, I suspect you guys are using some type of controlled substance. You know, you weren't really supposed to say marijuana, so he said controlled substance. And three of the guys said, let's kick his ass. And the other one guy said, don't kick his ass. He's a company XO in Kilo 3-8. I know him. That guy was a corporal. He got the other three guys in line. And again, they were all blowing dope. And they all marched back. And three of them, when they were marching back, kept saying to the corporal, we can still kick his ass. He'll never remember who we were. And he said, yes, he will. He's a smart guy. He's an athlete. And if he wasn't out just out here running, if he's going to chow down, might be different. But he's an athlete. That corporal marched them all back. They all went in for punishment. And they all admitted they were blowing dope. Three of them got discharged on the expeditious discharge program because it was about their fourth or fifth opportunity to distinguish themselves in an adverse manner. The corporal got busted to Lance Corporal. A year later, I saw him. He was a corporal again, and he was a platoon guide. No, he was a company guide on bear wow. in another company. So in that case, I agree. Drugs were tough. Alcohol was tough. Foolishness in the barracks was tough, but I think some of the most dynamic leaders that I worked with during that time that went on to make very senior ranks in the officer and enlisted rank structure, those were the guys that had a leadership style that moved past some of the challenges of racial prejudice and or alcohol, physical abuse or drug abuse, and I'm very fortunate I had staff NCOs that brought me over the line.
Mike Regner, Major General Type, United States Marine Corps retired. He is currently the National Director of Expositions for Marine Corps League, and we're going to talk about Marine Expo West coming up. But we're talking about his career and leadership and things like that. Sir, I have a question for you. Give me somebody who, after you had been in the Marine Corps for a time, and I'll say it no sooner than captain, okay? Give me somebody who you crossed paths with who you said, I want to be like that guy. Holy smokes, who is that? And I'll give you an example. I saw General Zinni as a colonel coming through Quantico in 1990, and he gave his combat concepts thing out at the basic school. I'd never heard of him in my life. John Kelly was the group chief at IOC. I was working for him, and he actually I hadn't even gone over there yet. I'd been designated to work for him. He saw me at Camp Barrett. I think I was headed out to do squadathon or whatever, and he said, "Hey Mac, are you going to see Colonel Zinni tonight?" And I said, "Well, sir, I'm going to be here doing this for a while." I said, should I get there? And he said, do not miss it. And I said, aye, sir. And I went. And I remember listening to him. And I'm thinking, first of all, who is this guy? And, like, as a Catholic, I remember, this guy's the burning bush, man, of Marines. He is tough. He's combat tested. He's funny. He's an intellectual, even though he hides it pretty well, doing his shtick that he does. Like, I want to be like that guy. Who in your career, as a senior junior officer, did you cross paths with and said, I want to be like that guy?
Well, let me just take Jenny for a second. He was a 4-star SETCOM commander. I was a colonel, and my billet was the director of the Marine Corps House Liaison Office, you know, on Capitol Hill in the House of Representatives. And right. General Zinni came into my office one day and says, Colonel Regner, can you give me the gouge on this member, and this member of Congress before I go and have office calls with them? And I had done a lot of congressional travel, and I thoroughly agree with here a 4-star general is asking a Marine colonel for a little background on the different personalities and leadership styles and strengths and other positions of some of the members of Congress. So General Zinni was one of those when I was a colonel. Now, going back to a captain, and in fact, let's take all the way back to a first lieutenant on the USS LPD Austin, LPD-4. The person who slept in one stateroom away from mine was Ollie North, the battalion, Major Ollie North. He was the battalion 3, and the battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel, I'll think of his name just a second, Norwood Grinnells. So that's the wife's name was Norwood. But, you know, I don't really remember all of my battalion commander's first names, but Lieutenant Colonel Grinnells. Lieutenant Colonel Grinnells went on to be a 2-star and be the president of the Citadel. He was one of the most dynamic lieutenant colonels I ever knew or leaders when I was a first lieutenant. And then Ollie North was his 3. And I used to actually, John Grinnells was his first name. I actually took John Grinnells and Ollie North on a couple of dove hunts out in Richland. I love to be out in the outdoors. I love to hunt. And I took them on a couple of dove hunts. I got to know my battalion commander, my battalion 3, and I was in a stateroom one door away from them on a 6-month deployment. All the clock in, I'm a company commander, and my battalion commander commanded my company in Vietnam. It was Lima 3-3. That battalion commander was Chuck Krulak, lieutenant colonel.
Wow.
Unbelievably, he'd come by the office every day at 6 a.m., knock on my hatch and say, Regner, are you sleeping there? And I'd say, well, I'm just getting back from PT. It was PT with the NCOs. And he'd say, well, I'm headed to the mess hall. I said, sir, first we exercise our brain, physically, mentally, and morally, and then we're allowed to eat. And I was always looking for a way to get over on Chuck Krulak. So as a lieutenant, Grinnells and North, as a company commander, you know, Chuck Krulak. And it was amazing. When he was the commandant and John Kelly was the colonel in the House of Representatives, Krulak said, I think I know a colonel who can not necessarily replace you, John Kelly, but do almost as good a job as you, and that is Colonel Mike Regner. And John said, I know who Mike Regner is. He'll be an excellent representative here in the House of Representatives. So roll the clock ahead. Now I'm a colonel. I got to be an understudy of John Kelly when he was a colonel in the House of Representatives. And then I got to watch him again when he was a 1-star, and he ran legislative liaison for the Marine Corps. And I followed him. I didn't replace him. I followed him in that billet, and I got to watch Jim Conway, dynamic, loved Marines. You know, I got to watch Pete Pace in his position as the chairman. I got to, like I said, I got to watch Chuck Krulak for a while as the commandant. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to tell you, I was just one lucky individual that got to even watch Lieutenant General Miller in his earlier days over at different commands. In fact, when it was Lieutenant Colonel Bob Miller at Supreme Headquarters, Allied Powers Europe, over in Mons, Belgium, working on NATO staff. And I was lieutenant colonel. He was a senior lieutenant colonel. I got to watch Bob Miller's focused determination and physical and dynamic, you know, personality. And I got to say, well, this guy's going places.
Come on, sir. He's a knuckle dragger. We all know it.
He was like I am. He knew I wrestled in college. And so every now and then, I get your butt wrestling. I said, sure. Anytime, anywhere, you name it. He says, well, okay, I got it. I can't beat your ass in wrestling, but I damn sure know I can lift more than you. You look like a little skinny 158-pounder. And, in fact, that's what I was, a little skinny 158-pounder. So that's just a couple of names that I can throw out. You like me, Mike, we know hundreds of leaders, NCOs, non-NCOs, family members, ministers that have shaped our lives, coaches, and that's just a few of the ones that I can come to think of at this time.
John Kelly's a friend of mine. I worked with him twice. In fact, I was working in division plans in 2004 when General Mattis's aide was wounded, and so John Kelly walks in and he says, Mac, you're going to come and be the CG's aide, the CG's staff sec. I said, I don't even know what that is. And he said, just shut up and do what I tell you to do. I said, okay, who do I work for? He said, you work for the CG and you work for me. And I said, well, do I report to you? He said, no, you report to the chief of staff. And I had just come out of the reserve after being out of the Marine Corps for 10 years because Dave Furness and Paul Kennedy had sent me an email and said, hey, we're going to war. Why don't you come back on? We'd love to have you. And I said, well, I don't really think we're going to war, but I'll put the paperwork in. And General Neller, my battalion commander, he wrote one of the endorsements for my package. And so I got a chance. And so Kelly says, you work for the chief of staff. Who's that? Joe Dunford, Mac. I'm like, I don't know who he is. And he's like, are you stupid? I said, no, I just got here. And he said, you'll love him. He's from Boston. I said, I hate people from Boston. He said, but the chance to watch those three in El Anbar in 2004, with everything that was going on. I mean, you talk about a little leadership, a daily leadership laboratory to watch guys operate under incredible pressure. And then that year, the eyes of the world on us. And it was amazing, amazing leadership experience. So similar to you, sir, the good fortune to cross paths with great people and then get a chance to watch them and learn from them and whatnot. As you look back in your Marine Corps career, do you have a favorite tour? If I ask you, look, you can only pick one. Give me your favorite tour that you spent.
Everybody who's commanded an infantry battalion would probably, or division, mew, regiment, company, platoon. Even though a battalion, that's 2/8 and BLT 2/8, even though you command 850, then up to 1250 when you're a BLT, you really, really get to know a lot of people because of your shipboard time, your new stock workup packages, your deployment time, your post-deployment, your family readiness issues. I think the most rewarding was probably my battalion command time. And, you know, I got to tell you, Mike, at the same time, that was my most sorrowful days in the Marine Corps when I had a mishap, an aircraft mishap, when my battalion staff and I got on the same CH-46. And the reason I got on that because my Huey, my command control bird, the comms went down. I was in that aircraft with John Love, now Lieutenant General John Love, over at the Mill Secretary in NATO. Right. And John Condello was my radio operator. The three of us were in the CNC bird, the Huey. The comms didn't work. We all jumped in the CH-46 for about 1 minute. It started to take off, and the CNC bird said, hey, we got the package back up. Well, John Condello. I said, hey, John, I said, Lance Corporal Condello, I got it. And so I jumped back in the bird with John Love. We took off. 3 minutes later, there was a mid-air collision. A Cobra coming out of the zone collided with the CH-46. I lost my combo, my comm chief, my S-3 chief, my S-3 officer, John Condell, my RTO, and a couple other folks that worked in the 3 shop, and a liaison officer from the Army that worked for me. It was catastrophic. The Cobra pilots died. One pilot died in the CH-46. The other pilot got banged up severely. The two crew members in the 46 died. So it was catastrophic. And I just happened by the good Lord. I saw the fireball. I saw it go down. I went to the air station. I reported the aircraft mishap and loss. I nearly jumped in another CNC bird that took me right back to the crash site within 300 yards of the crash site because it was all on flames. I took my my weapons company commander and a radio operator with me. And I went into that crash site because I had hunted in that area about 3 or 4 days earlier with the Camp Lejeune Rod and Gun Club. So I knew the area, I knew the swamp, I knew the direction of the water flow and where that fuel was going to flow into the new river and how I could guide CFR, crash, fire, and rescue in there as soon as they could get there, which I think the crash took place at about 2:30 in the morning and CFR was on scene about an hour later. The medical folks were there probably within an hour, but I was first on the scene. I went to the Cobra, saw those guys, went, because that was the closest bird, went to the CH-46, which was upside down in a swamp, and only about 2 feet of the fuselage of the CH-46 was visible, so I knew it was still there. It was that deep of a swamp, and we got around the fire and the water. It was a very, very difficult time in my life, and I just prayed over it and worked through it and had the trauma of Mother's Day. That was Mother's Day, 1996. So that was a very, very tough day. But we all worked through it, and we had a great family readiness team. And, of course, the news was all over it. Everybody wanted to know, and I think I made the first phone call out. And I called up my key readiness chain, and that was my wife who put the call tree out and said, it's true, we've had a mishap. And I talked to the battalion commander, my husband Mike, and we'll be in contact. So we had a very, very good network. But the beauty of command is you get to know so many people, so many great people, sailors and Marines, and you live with them and you cry with them and you die with them if necessary. And then when the times are tough, you've got to stick with them and you've got to be there for them. But so that's a long answer, but my favorite, most passionate command was that battalion command time. Probably another way to answer that as well, Mike, is what were the hardest jobs? And I was damn sure never prepared to be a recruiter from 1979 to 1983. Never. I was never prepared after giving up company command time that Chuck Krulak made me the battalion logistics officer because I had the ability to plan things out. And I was never in my wildest dreams thought I would go to Capitol Hill and be the legislative director of the House of Representatives for the Marine Corps because I never think I got above a C in high school government. Those are the three jobs that you got to say, you've got to be kidding me. But you didn't ask me that, but I had to share it. So enough of my passion. I got to tell you, every day I think of those young men and young women that I had the opportunity and the honor to serve beside. And in some cases, report to their moms and dads and wives and family members that they're with St. Peter at the Pearly Gates.
I just had dinner with the current CO of 2-8 on Friday night. His name's Lieutenant Colonel Tom Sieverts, and he's a fan of All Marine Radio, so I'm sure he'll listen to this. And 2-8's alive and kicking, and obviously and doing well. I got a chance to talk to their Marines last week, so it's always whenever you get the chance to be around Marines after you get out. Just a great time. So talk about, you're now the national director of expositions for the Marine Corps League. What does that mean?
That means I get to invite lots of people, active duty as well as industry, for the Marine Corps League, because I work for the Marine Corps League. And so the Marine Corps League says, you know, that's really not enough for you, Reichner. The last Commandant, Dick Gore down in South Carolina says, I want to make you the National Director of Government Affairs and the National Director of Expos. What do you think of that? And what that means is, I just want you to stay current with all those Marine generals, all those Marine sergeants, majors, and master gunnery sergeants, and staff NCOs and officers. We want you to be our conduit and kind of work with us on Capitol Hill issues, government affairs issues, as well as, you know, be the director, which really means when you're the director of the Expo West at Camp Phelps and the Expo East at Camp Lejeune, and then modern day Marine Aquatica, what that really means is, you know, you really want to be the head, but there are many people much more qualified than I am that are the day in and day out. They're hiring the different companies for security. They're hiring the different folks to set up the expo. But when the Commandant of the Marine Corps says, Mike, what are some of the key areas that the expo is going to represent? I said, well, sir, over the last year, you talked about the density of littoral combat in the littoral areas. You've talked about the five-man squad. You've talked about HIMARS. You've talked about different types of redundancy in our comm systems, and you've talked about something as simple as camouflage and unmanned aerial systems. So it's my responsibility to make sure those type of businesses get a chance to display the most current and modern technology now and in the future, 3D printing, artificial intelligence. Those type of companies will be represented at these different expos. He said, that's exactly what I want to hear. I want you to work closely with Marine Corps Warfighting Lab. I want you to work closely with PP&O, INL, the different organizations, Deputy Commandant for Information, MAR 4 Cyber. Work with them so that if they say, are these particular areas that I want to focus on, are there seminars by our Marine generals at or Marine Corps Association Foundation? Are there seminars that are going to talk about this? Small business seminars. And I say, yes, sir, and I help set that up with the help of Alex Hetherington. And that's one of the four major positions that I enjoy filling for the benefit of the Marine Corps. And any questions on that, Mike? Because I really am excited about three other positions that I get the chance to take care of the Marine Corps and the Navy on in a recent position I was just appointed to.
We can talk about that. What I want to talk about, though, as Director of Expositions, Marine Corps West Expo is coming up. And I'm going to be there doing the show, and then I'm also going to get a chance to do the class you and I were talking before we came on the air, but that I just gave at Camp Lejeune in that I call post-traumatic winning. And so I'm excited. Tell people that are going to be in the area that might want to attend, what are they going to see this year? What's new about it this year? What are you excited about?
Okay, I'm excited because it really starts off on Wednesday night with Marine Corps Association Foundation, and they have a guest speaker at that dinner, and that's the 1MEF commander, Lieutenant General Jody Osterman. Jody, when I was the division commander at 1st Marine Division, he was the deputy commander, and I've known Jody since he was probably a lieutenant colonel, and his wonderful bride, Jen. So I'm excited about Wednesday night, and I'm excited where he's going to talk about the different threats and the different capabilities of 1MEF. I'm excited that on Thursday, we're going to get a a seminar that's going to talk about all the levels of fitness, psychological fitness, mental fitness, physical fitness. And that's going to come out of one of the programs at Marine Corps Combat Development Center on Marine Corps fitness. We're also going to have a seminar on the new and improved, I hope, battle skills testing. You know, I really have followed some of the different corporations and how they have watched the Commandant of the Marine Corps think tank speeches and seminars and presentations. I followed Dan O'Donohue, Brian Boudreau. Dan O'Donohue was DCI, Deputy Commandant for Information. He's moved on to another fine job. I followed Brian Boudreau in Plans, Policy, and Operations. And I followed, Lori Reynolds, who's got Deputy Commandant for Information. And I followed Malok, Brigadier General Malok. I followed some of these officers, what they've talked about. And as I stated a little bit earlier, I love to see what industry is providing for 3D printing. What can we do next? I really like to see the newest and latest body armor, the newest and latest small arms protective inserts, the small arms, the ammunition. I like to just see the stocks. How are we going to keep these hard chargers warm? Because you know what, Mike? We're going to do more and more in Norway. We're going to do more and more in NATO because we got some challenges going on in Europe. So we got to not only protect our Marines, we got to keep them warm, but some of the technology that's going in our latest vehicles. Now, we both know that the good old amphibious tractor is going to get replaced,
right,
and it's going to take some time, but the amphibious combat replacement vehicle is going to be the next one up. And, you know, we're going through testing on that. So if a Marine said to me, "General, you know, I'm going to be the radio operator. I'm going to be the gunner. I'm going to be the mechanic that won't have to worry about the final drive any longer in a triple AD," because unfortunately that was the hydraulic systems that just had some challenges in our AVs. I want to see the latest vehicles. I want to see the latest engineering technology for any cyber warfare, batteries, radios. What can we do that is finally going to be light enough instead of just adding another pound on a Marine that when they walk out of a forward operating base, Mike, like my son, when he was a captain in Iraq, when he was in the first lieutenant Iraq, when he was a captain in Afghanistan, and I don't think any platoon commander, infantry, I don't think he ever left the forward operating base with less than 80 or 90 pounds on his back. Because people keep coming up with great ideas. I want to see great ideas that lighten the load of an individual rifleman, that give aviation pilots and crew chiefs more technology, more reliable communications, and I think those are some of the prospects and aspects and technology that we will see at the Modern Day Marine West, Expo West.
All right. Is there a module that discusses the commander's ability to say, wear this but don't wear that? Because one of the issues is we have all this stuff, but, you know, in theory, the commanding officer decides what you can wear at night. You know, maybe we don't need all the body armor because stealth is more important. But then there's the, if this guy gets shot in the chest and dies, the Marine Corps is going to see that blow up in its face. Any chance we'll see have the accompanying command discussion about giving commanders the right to, not only the right, the obligation to do that and be okay with it? No?
That's a huge question, Mike. And you know what? I don't necessarily know if that will come up in dialogue. I think it should be in every different seminar where infantry and or combat arms leaders are engaged in a presentation or a seminar or a discussion. But at the same time, I believe that is such an important topic that you brought up. It must be addressed at the commander's course that meets, as you know, there's two commander's courses every year. I think one goes in April, another one like in October. And the commander's course for Lieutenant Colonel Command and Colonel Command, two golden opportunities for the lecturers or the briefers to, in fact, have that same dialogue with the incoming commanders. And I think that's an excellent point that you brought out, and I just hope that it does reach to the surface because it is a commander's call. But, you know, the mantle of command is heavy. It is loaded with responsibility, and when a commander makes that call, it's got to be a prudent call based on all the facts, and I'm sure that some commanders may have gotten it right or may have gotten wrong.
My concern, sir, is some just stay away from it because you can't win that one. And I remember General Kelly when he was at OLA, the Office of Legislative Affairs, as a brigadier when he ran the whole thing. I can't remember the hearings that were going on. And he brought a Marine. Completely dressed out in what Marines were wearing in Iraq at the time. And the members that were there, both senators and congressmen, were shocked. Right? You're rolling around like a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, like, oh, like Frankenstein. Like, how do you move in this? And then let's dial the temperature up to 125 and see how you do it. So I remember it was interesting to watch as they went, oh my God, how would they do that? But again, you know, General Kelly's remark was, you know, and we're not comfortable anymore. A lot of it because of social media and the accusations that you got my son killed because you didn't have him wearing all his stuff, and why wasn't he doing that? And so it's kind of an interesting article. So I want to ask you this. In the past, the Marine Corps expos have been largely about equipment. And I read someplace that you all are attempting to have the intellectual component of the expos this year, and you've been headed in that direction, be just as robust as the equipment side that has always been popular with Marines.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. 2 years ago, when I was hired by the Marine Corps League to run the expos, over the years, I've attended the Army of the United States of America Expo, the AUSA. I've attended the Navy League Expo, Sierra Space, and I've actually been out and seen some of the technology and cyber expos out at Armed Forces Communications Electronics Association out west. And so I've seen those, and I've seen the level of equipment, but I've also seen the very professional presentations given. So when I came into this and I got to know some of the leaders, and especially the leader we have now, Alex Hetherington, I said, Alex, I want more focus. And the Commandant wants us to focus more on presentations because it's an academic environment, especially when you've got all these different schools at Quantico, Virginia. This is the chance for us, our senior leaders and our senior staff NCOs, to educate in a seminar type dialogue. And so you're absolutely right. If you were to take a look at the last 2 years and see that 2 years ago we might have had three, a year ago we probably had six, and this expo out west we're going to have three or four, just that expo, but the modern day Marine Expo we're hoping to have well over 10 different seminar and panels that discuss some of the very key issues, because it's got to be more than equipment. The academic side, the learning side, the discussion has got to be very similar to what General Netler has stated. I don't want a lot of yes men. I want individuals that can think out of the box, knowing what's in the box, and come up with newest and latest ideas and technologies that will save lives. So you're absolutely right. In the last 2 years, and I had a lot of help with Alex Hetherington, the real director of how the whole expo and how the business side of the expo is run. But Alex is one of those hard-charging Marine leaders that understands that if you want to, you really want to take care of your seed corn, your young Marines, you give them the equipment, but you educate them first so they know the value and the importance of winning wars and fighting battles, whether it's, you know, from a distance, which academically you can really do that. You can really study the enemy. You can study the challenges that are out there, but you've got to be educated and informed to make the best decisions. And I hope that that's what we're going to present more and more of, which is following exactly what the Commandant and I, the Assistant Commandant and I actually talked about this awards ceremony last week, and the Director of the Marine Corps staff is taking a look at it. And helping us do this is the Marine Corps Association Foundation. So they've been a key element of this as well. Thank you.
All right, sir. Tell us, I'm looking at the flyer, Marine West, February 6 to 8, 2019. And just so everybody knows, an indication of the robust intellectual nature of that is going to be that I'm presenting there. So you know they're headed in the right direction if I'm going to be there presenting. But I'm only partially joking about that, okay? I will tell you this, sir, I'm going to make a prediction. Based on the response of what I and my two partners that were there last week, we did at Camp Lejeune last week, I'm going to tell you that post-traumatic winning is going to be a big, big deal, not only in the Marine Corps, but it's going to be a big deal in DOD, and it's going to be a big deal in the country, because it's taking Marine culture and it's talking about how we need to accept trauma because it's never going away, and we learn to live with it. But we're Marines. We're not in it to mark time or court it. We're in it to boot it in the face and win it. And how, by sharing what you learn with others, by touching the lives of other people, you can take something that initially strikes you as unfortunate, and by giving of yourself, especially the things that you've learned about coexisting with trauma, and give that to other people, touch their lives, help them be better people, help their lives be better, you, much like the Grinch's heart grew, your heart will grow, and you can live a better life because of it, not a worse life. And that's fully resident inside of all of us. We're all capable of it. And I challenged the Marines at Camp Lejeune, and I said this to them. I said, look, the Marine Corps now has more suicide problems than it ever had, more suicide plans than it ever has. And we have more suicides than we've ever had. The Marine Corps, big Marine Corps, is not going to solve the suicide problem. You are going to solve the suicide problem. You guys here, sitting here in this room, and gals in this room, you are going to solve it, and you're going to solve it armed with concepts and ideas like this, to talk about accepting it, because it's a simple fact of life, understanding it's not going away, understanding that you can not only live with it, but you can thrive, and the tribe who picks door number 4, that not too many pick, we can do this, it's in our history. And we need to, and we're gonna show you how to do it. So I'm awfully excited about it, if you can't tell, and I'm really excited to share it with at the expo on February 6th to 8th at Pendleton. Then you go Marine Corps South. Is that I'll be at that too. I'll go back to Camp Lejeune and do it there. So I'm looking forward to that. And in fact, they're already scheduling. I did two of them for spouses, sir, and the response was unbelievable. But they're arranging me to speak again when I'm in North Carolina for the Marine South Expo, April 11th and 12th, and then Modern Day Marine, September 17th through 19th, corresponds to the days of the Battle of Antietam. 2019 at Marine Corps Base Quantico. So exciting stuff. What haven't I been smart enough to ask you, sir, that you want people to know about the expo?
I just want to endorse an item you just talked about, and that is unfortunately, some of the areas that mentally challenge our Marines that give us the suicide issues that we have. And I can't take credit for what I would like to say, but I heard a bright person once tell me drama is optional, but crisis is inevitable. Now, you can turn it around. Crisis is inevitable. We're going to have it. But drama is optional. And I've tried to focus on that at times with saying we're going to have, you know, when you command a battalion, when you have a platoon, you're going to have young men and young women that either hurt themselves or get hurt in combat or get hurt in training. And with programs such as, you know, post-traumatic winning, I got to tell you, the Corps is like a team. The Corps is like a unbelievable team that brings people together that want to focus on the accomplishment of a mission, and that mission might be unity of the fire team. I mean, the fire team is the basic family structure of the Corps, and it goes up from that. But I got to tell you, you're hitting it out of the ballpark with some of the areas that you're focusing on, because our young Marines need to have, you know, they need to have somebody telling them. It can be their staff NCOs. It can be their officers, their footy, their fellow NCOs and non-NCOs. But it's also good, Mike, in your case, to have this concept, share it with Marines, believe in it, be personable, be genuine, and I think that they're going to follow up with that. Now, you asked me a little bit about those three different expos that we run, and of course the big one is the September expo. But any comments, Mike, on just the way I see crisis is going to happen, and in every Marine that's been on active duty for a day or a year or 10 years has seen crisis. But the true leaders, the dynamic individuals, understand that the drama side is really an optional piece, and you've got to work, you've got to understand it. You might have to appreciate it, but you've got to do some type of winning structure, discipline, protocols, awareness, so that does not drag down an operation, drag down a team, drag down a unit or an individual.
No, yes, sir, let me tell you, it was awesome, and I told you I'd emailed you General Furness's interview that we did today, talking about the response he's got with it. But, you know, it's so powerful. For instance, a helicopter crashed into my assembly area in 29 Palms. A Huey did in 1993. I was a company commander of Alpha Company, 3rd LAR. Lieutenant Colonel Bob Neller had just given up command of the battalion. He was a RCT-7 XO at the time. And everybody in the helicopter was killed. But what came out of that was the greatest advice anybody's ever given me in my life, and I've given it to Marines. I've given it to family members who face crisis. I've given it to Marines in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that is this. You'll never get over this. Okay, you have to learn to accept it, you have to learn to coexist with it, and then you have to learn to thrive with it. And you can do it, and we will help you, we'll support you, and we'll teach you how to do it. And when you say that to them, because, you know, and the other thing that we talk about is, look, trauma is trauma. You know, I know we'd like to think that because we got some of it in combat that, you know, that's better. But look, Elizabeth Smart was kidnapped at the age of 14, raped for 9 straight months. That's a little bit of trauma. My oldest sister's 2 sons were murdered by their father, who then committed suicide. Nobody I know who's fought in Iraq and Afghanistan comes close to my sister. So that they understand that whether you got the crap beat out of you as a little kid for no reason and didn't understand it and walk around with that, we all have it in us. But we can do it. We have to learn about it. We have to understand how it affects us. We have to learn some wellness practices on how to off-ramp some of that anxiety that we get because of it. But we all deal with it. And it was amazing, sir, when you stand up as senior leaders and the powerful example of the division commander standing up and talking about what it was like for he and his wife to get a call from a doctor telling them that their daughter was mentally retarded. and his baby, and hear him talk about it in front of the Marines of the division, setting an example of, hey, I live with it too. Don't be afraid to talk about it. And when you talk about it, that's just an invitation to them to talk about it. And they'll take you up on it. And it was such an incredible week, and it's really exciting because they responded to it in a way that I was curious to see how they would respond. And I would tell you, when you have people saying life changing, when you have Sergeant Major saying the best PME I've ever, Sergeant Major 10th Marines, the best PME I've ever seen in my life, that's what's to me exciting about this intellectual side of the Marine Corps that you are going to bring to people, and not only that, but other topics as well. But and General Nellis' comments about, you know, I was a captain in Quantico during the whole maneuver warfare discussion. Guys like John Kelly, John Allen, General Zinni was there, General Van Riper was there, General O'Neill was there, and you had this intense, you know, we would argue, you know, like we would fight. I mean, you'd be knocked down, drag out. Like, how much initiative can you use inside this organization, or is everybody doing their own thing? How does that work? And then out of that, I mean, I remember saying, hey, we're not talking about initiative, we're talking about coordinated initiative. Because if you don't coordinate it, it's bullshit. You're going to get yourself killed, let alone somebody else. And so that kind of vibrant intellectual activity is what you're talking about. And I, if you can't tell, I'm moderately fired up to be a part of it.
Yeah, you got to be fired up. I mean, you're a Marine. You'll always be a Marine. And you get to serve beside Marines. You get to work with Marines and their families. And, I mean, you got to approach this life and these opportunities with all the august nature of an individual who knows he's, when he hits the rack at night, he puts his head on the gas mask because he doesn't have a pillow, and he gets to say, it was a great day. What did I do for my Corps and my country today? And you know, you don't have that challenge. You get to say maybe I made one individual a little happier, a little more aware, and maybe he'll take care of himself a little bit more and or his buddies.
My guest has been Major General Mike Regner, USMC retired. We've been talking about the Marine Corps Expos coming up, first one coming up here in February 6th, 8th at Camp Pendleton. Hey, sir, this is kind of a warning word to everybody. Hopefully in the next 2 weeks I can have you back on and we can talk about the particulars and the schedule and things like that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, every chance I get to share some ideas with Marines and or listen to their great ideas, because I have I work for the Secretary of the Navy on a retiree council, and I work as a senior mentor for the Marine Corps, and I'm just so honored I get to be around Marines in three or four different venues. So absolutely, I look forward to the opportunity to share ideas and to learn from some of the programs that you're sponsoring, Mike. And I hope that the Expo West goes as well as I think it will. I think we're going to have great attendance, and I think that you will be pleasantly surprised at a lot of the individuals on the West Coast that just take in some of this enthusiasm and wellness that you'll give us a chance to share with you on.
You know, and most exciting is that, look, we're talking about hardening the force. When we're able to withstand this stuff, you're hardening the force, which makes us more lethal. So it's not about simply, you know, we're Marines, man. We want to be hard so we can go fight, not so we can go to Starbucks. And that's what I love about this. It's all wrapped in keep your honor clean. It's all wrapped in winning in our culture. And so very, very cool. All right, sir. I will give you a call or get in touch with Alex, and we'll get you on the week before the event. And we'll continue to beat this horse, make sure people know. First of all, they're great cultural events if you've never been to them, between the technology and the intellectual content and just simply Marines everywhere. On the West Coast here, they do a lot of the grilling outdoors, and there's all kinds of great stuff. So it's a great place to reconnect with Marines, to meet new Marines, and to participate in the cultural events of the Marine Corps. And so this is a great one. So Marine West, February 6th through 8th, 2019, Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, California, the home of the Blue Diamond. So, sir, first of all, thank you for doing this tonight. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate your hard work and taking care of Marines.
All right. You bet. That is Major General Mike Regner, United States Marine Corps. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.